Hey guys, you're watching Adult Films Exposed on the Popcorn Talk Network. We're talking to Derek Pierce. Stick around.
Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, this is Adult Films Exposed. In-depth discussion and interviews with members of the adult film industry.
Hey guys, welcome to a brand new episode of Adult Films Exposed. If you have not already, make sure you've subscribed on YouTube and iTunes. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at AFXPOSED. I'm your host, Yael Teagle, and I'm with Derek Pierce. Hello, Derek.
Hi.
Welcome to Adult Films Exposed.
Thank you.
I'm really excited. I want to jump in first with what I'm most excited about. You play Magic Mike in the Magic Mike XXL parody.
How long have you been holding that question? You've been talking to me off air for like 20 minutes.
Uh-huh. I've been holding it in. Because as a fan of the original film.
Yes. The cult classic.
The cult classic original film. I'm very excited about the parody. Because I personally feel that the parody just does what we wanted to see in the first film.
I would agree.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about the first Magic Mike is myself and basically the whole Wicked team, Brad Armstrong, Jessica Drake, a few of the other contract girls at the time, we all went to go see the first Magic Mike together. Mm-hmm. Had no inclinations to do the parody or anything. And so Jessica's watching the movie, looking at me. Watched a movie, looking at me, watched a movie, look at Brad, at me and Brad, and she's like, why are we not shooting this? Why don't we make this? And Brad's like, oh, it's too late, their movie's already out. So when he found out that they were doing the second one,
Yeah. He
called me in like January, right before AVN Awards, and was like, so I think I want to do this Magic Mike thing. And I was like, yeah, I kind of thought you would. And I had done two other dance movies for Wicked also. So he already knew. Did I have a background in dance.
Right.
So he was like, what do you think? And I'm like, let's do it. It's probably going to be cool.
So when it comes to dancing, because I know that in the original film, the dancing is the most interesting part of the film.
Of course.
Is the hot bodies dancing. So when it comes to the parody, and you are a dancer, what about your teammates?
You know, I'll tell you, dead to rights, honest, the majority of the guys were pretty forthcoming about their lack of experience with rhythmic activities.
Okay.
And they killed it. Yeah. I mean, they really did a really good job considering the amount of time frame that we had. Mm-hmm. We didn't have professional choreographers. We did everything ourselves.
Did you choreograph?
I helped a lot, but we pretty much just took it straight off of the first movie.
Oh, awesome.
So all of the group choreography, we all kind of did it together. Mm-hmm. And dedicated the time to do rehearsals.
How long did you rehearse?
Probably over the course of a month and a half, 2 months as a group.
Yeah.
And I had started kind of like getting my feet wet again in January. I have a couple friends who are choreographers, so I was making them spend time in the studio with me.
Yeah.
But the guys were great. I really, really, you know, I was like, ugh, it's going to suck. Like, you know, if you're on a bunch of dudes who already can't dance, it's going to be terrible. No, they really, like, I can't say enough how much respect I have for their work ethic as far as doing something that they were thoroughly uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
Because they all just said, screw it. And they threw caution to the wind. They're like, I guess we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard part for everybody, myself included, were the solos.
Yeah.
Like the solo dance routines.
Right.
Because there were no routines. And Brad kept saying, well, you're just going to get out there and wing it. It'll be fine. And you're just like, are you retarded? Really? Like, I'm going to get in front of... No. Uh-uh. And so he kept saying, like, everybody has to do their solos.
Right.
You know, at least once before we get on camera. Nobody wanted to do their solos. Nobody. And we're all like, who are you going to go? I'm not going to go. How about you? You going to go? Nah. And finally, the night before, Brad was like, okay, for real. You guys each have to go do a solo. I need to see what you guys are going to do. At least something.
Right.
Everybody stepped up and killed it. They really awesome. Did. And like I said, the guy, like Tony Martinez, is not comfortable dancing. He was one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Did awesome. he literally went home and watched his character and was like, screw it, I'm going for it. Yeah. And it was probably the most fun I've had on an adult set yet.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. The day that we did all of the stripping and the teases,
right.
That was a blast. We had like a room full of like 40 extras, 40 girls who were so compliant. I mean, and I guess if you think about it from their perspective, right. They're like, oh, a bunch of naked dudes. Okay. And we get to throw money at them. Even better.
Right. That sounds like the best extra gig ever.
Yeah. And they were so good. They were there for probably about at least 7 or 8 hours. Not a single complaint. They listened to everything that Brad asked them to do. And they just had a blast. And we had a blast. And the funny part is, I mean, we're naked for a living, right? Mm-hmm. But every guy was like, no cookies, no soda. We all had our little meals that we had prepped, and the crew's having pizza and right. stuff. And we're like, nah, man, we can't. We got to dance in a little while. And it's like, dude, you're naked on camera every day.
Right.
And I know, but we got to dance now. Now we have to wear a G-string. For some reason, the G-string is the intimidating thing, not being naked.
Well, I mean, it's different. When you're used to one thing, it's intimidating to do something different.
It's really different, yeah.
Yeah. But you guys started working on, and this is the parody of the first film.
It's a combination of the two. Brad worked really hard to find out what the second one was about
right.
before it was really released, and even came up on a few scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were the right script, maybe not.
Yeah.
But basically, he did a bit of a... of his own take on what it would be from the information he found out.
Right.
So he took some elements from the first one and elements from the second one with Dallas leaving
mm-hmm.
and having the female come in and basically run the show. So it was good. He actually wrote a pretty good script. And I mean, at the end of the day, I know it's porn, but you know, he did put some time, effort and energy. It wasn't like, you know, hey, nice shoes, want to have sex.
Right.
It actually, yes, there's dialogue from time to time.
Right. And it's dialogue based on the dialogue from the film.
Absolutely. Oh, and Ryan McClain, who played the Dallas character, which mm-hmm. is McConaughey's character.
Yeah.
Stop it. Nailed it. Like, we had to cut a bunch of times because a bunch of the guys couldn't keep it together. And Brad was getting pissed off. Like,
right.
why are you guys laughing? And it's like, dude, I'm sorry, man. Every time I hear him, I hear McConaughey. He destroyed the role. So they did a great job.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And when you work on parodies, is it tough to do? Because you guys make the parodies before the film comes out sometimes.
No.
No?
We might make the parody before, like, the edition comes out. You know what I mean? Or the new one.
Okay.
But technically, we can get into trouble if we make a parody before the movie's out, because then we're not making a parody.
I see.
We're technically stealing.
Got it.
The concept.
All right.
Yeah, that's there was a company that did a 50 Shades movie
right.
before it came out.
But from what I understood, they also did word for word the book into a
movie. They got railed. They had to take everything back. I don't know what their final closed door deal was, but they lost a lot of money.
So you guys can't make the parody until after the film's out.
Well, after the initial. Yeah,
right.
So when the first Magic Mike came out, now the gloves are off. We can kind of do whatever we want.
Awesome.
As long as we disclose the fact that it's, you know, it's a parody on that movie, we're good.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some other parodies that you've been a part of. You got to play Deadpool in the Wolverine parody. And I know you had told me that you are now a huge Deadpool fan. And you do a lot of comic and nerd kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's funny. When parodies first started coming out in the adult business, I couldn't get a job to save my life. Like, I couldn't even probably be a PA. Because they were doing parodies of every 70s, 80s, and 90s sitcom
mm-hmm.
that was out.
Yeah.
And I don't obviously look like any of those characters.
Right.
She's like, oh, sorry, D, we can't really use you for that, you know. And I'm like, it's okay, I'll just be over here working for Kink. you know, but then as they started to evolve and mm-hmm. guys like Axel Braun
right.
And a few others started getting into the comic book activities, well, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm that guy. I'm 6 feet tall. I'm 210 pounds. I fit the build of
right.
every, pretty much every nemesis that there is. So for every you know, Captain America, they have to have, you know, his foe, and
yeah.
I can play any of those. And that one, I play Crossbones, you know, and with this one, Deadpool is really not the bad guy,
right?
He's the anti-hero.
Yeah.
So I fit that build, and I'm bigger than a lot of the guys in the business build wise. So you get that visual
mm-hmm.
of me being a little bit larger than their hero.
Yeah.
Which they like a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you find that your build, I mean, aside from parodies, has either helped or hindered your career?
Yeah. You know, in the beginning, they made a big deal about my tattoos. And I didn't have the sleeve initially. Mm-hmm. I just had my dragon. And what I got back was like, oh, well, we don't shoot guys with tattoos and clean cut look. And
when was this?
8 years ago.
Because right now, like, you cannot watch an adult film that doesn't have tattoos.
Listen, they had them then too. It just wasn't as prevalent. And I was, outside of a guy named Mark Davis, I was the only bald guy at the time. And I had tattoos. And they were like, well, you know, you're almost like a little too kind of scary looking, like intimidating looking
mm-hmm.
to be booked in a romance movie.
Right.
After time, they kind of were like, oh, I guess that's not really the case. And so when I started getting my sleeve done, nobody really said anything. I had directors that shoot me every month. And after I got my sleeve done, maybe a few months after, one of them was like, did you get another tattoo? And I'm like, yeah, from here to here. And they're like, oh, I thought you already had some of that. So they don't even really notice at this point. But now I'm getting booked because I'm Derek Pierce and not right. because they just need a guy.
Right.
So I don't think that they really make that distinction anymore. And tattoos are so mainstream.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think also in the mainstream movies,
mm-hmm.
the grown man look is back into play. There's no more Twilight movies. Thank God. So the 150-pound, guy shadow wearing dude is yeah. not the hero. You know, he's not saving the day. They're back to grown men. Gerard Butler's and those kind of guys
yeah.
that you look and you're like, that's a man, you know.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, Hugh Jackman is another one. But they're back to being men.
Right.
And so for me, that's good
yeah.
because I'm full grown. So it works out for me.
Do you think the trend might shift again and we'll go back to
I think
it'll
always shift.
Yeah.
What happens in adult happens in mainstream.
Right.
What happens in mainstream happens in adult. It comes from whatever's in front of the camera versus whatever's behind the camera. I think we follow the trend of mainstream of what's being shot. And I think that mainstream follows us technologically.
Okay.
So when DV tapes first came out, porn was shooting those way before mainstream ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Digital came out, porn was shooting that because we're always looking for an edge.
Right.
You know, how can we shoot faster? How can we shoot more efficiently? How can we shoot cheaper? You know, so when everybody started using, you know, like the D-series cameras,
right.
we started that. We were doing that as far as a conglomerate, you know what I mean?
Right.
Where other people were shooting it very, very few and far between. So now these little D-series, D-body cameras that were this big now come on a rig
right.
that are like 50 pounds. And I'm like, oh, that looks kind of like a Panavision camera. I'm just throwing it out there. You know, but so I think from the backside of the camera, mainstream follows whatever works visually in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a tendency to adopt it because then they don't have to do the trial and error.
Right.
We do.
Yeah.
But we're willing to take that trial and error because in the end it's better for us. And in turn, we follow Magic Mike. Oh, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Make a porn out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the story of Magic Mike was halfway there.
Yeah.
They just needed to finish it.
The storyline is goofy as hell and it's okay. It's,
yeah.
See, I'm a total movie buff. Like I go to the movies to check out for 2 hours
mm-hmm.
and that's what I go for. And I will buy pretty much anything that they put on the screen. You know, would you say an alien has a mistress and he's running for president? Let's see what happens. I'm for it. I'm okay with it. You know, I don't mind that. I don't need too much reality
mm-hmm.
in my movies because that's outside.
Right.
I'll catch that on the way out the door. So when we find something that's cool and fun, like, why not do it? It's fun. Who cares? And for the Magic Mike series, it for me, my opinion is it gave females the license to be absolute perverts.
Yeah.
Which, because if you made the transverse to be what that movie is, which would be females, it would never even gotten made.
Right.
A bunch of female strippers. Oh God, how misogynistic. Like, it never would have flown.
I mean, I feel like there's just, we're already saturated with that kind of thing.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. Like, to make a movie out of it, they would have been like, next.
Right.
But as soon as you make it guys, they're like, oh, well, tell me more.
Right.
You know, and when you put someone like Channing Tatum there and a few of the other really good looking guys who can dance, forget it. It's a no brainer. They're going to knock it out of the park because visually it looks awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless of if Magic Mike continues to make more films, would you guys continue to make more of the parodies?
Probably not. Okay. I don't see us doing another one because it's kind of redundant at that point.
But all the dancing. I mean, also the stripping and the sex, but all the dancing.
They could do like a Step Up, which was like another dance movie that Channing did. But yeah, I don't know that they would do another one. Maybe. I mean, who knows? In my opinion, for our Magic Mike parody, is it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to fall flat on its face because of the content,
right?
Or it's going to be epic because of the content,
right?
You know, and so it's literally that 50-50, but it's either going to be a home run or it's going to be a you know, out of bounds drive, and that's the two extremes of it. But so far, the response has been, it's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where can people find it? That's what I
I know that they have it on wickedpictures.com. Mm-hmm. You can find links on my Instagram, which is Derek Pierce. You can find it. You can just Google it. Yeah. I mean, you know, Magic Mike Triple XL. Make sure you add that extra X.
Yeah. It's really important.
Yeah. But if you do that, even if you're on Instagram, you hashtag it. There's dozens and dozens of pictures from the movie and stuff like that. And I've been tagging Channing Tatum in every Magic Mike post I put. So I know he knows that the movie exists.
Yeah.
I just want an acknowledgement, like a, I dug it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cause from what I hear, he has a really good sense of humor.
Right.
And if you saw him in This Is the End.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he played a gimp. You know what I mean? Somebody else's sex toy.
Right.
So you gotta have, you know, that kind of comedic relief in your life. So I hope, even if he never acknowledges it, I hope he really gets a kick out of it, because it was funny and goofy to make it. Mm-hmm. And because I know the whole crew, it was like, oh, there goes D dancing again. Like, it's just the common running thread. And I must have done the Magic Mike spin like 100 times in that damn movie.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about some of the other, Axel Braun parodies that you did. So you had said that you weren't really like Deadpool. You weren't really a big fan of Deadpool before, but now you're really into looking into Deadpool.
Absolutely.
Have you become like a big old geek now?
I've always been a casual geek.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
but
I mean?
But now you're a big old geek?
Huge. Like I would totally go to Comic-Con as Deadpool. I wouldn't. I would go to Comic-Con as Mandarin, because I played the Mandarin character in another Axel Braun movie, and Axel had no intentions of giving me that role.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because Mandarin's Asian.
Right.
And so the guy who wrote the script, which is Brent Pryor, another director and cameraman, we were shooting the Avengers movie at the same time. And I know, right? We just shoot them all right now.
Yeah.
we were shooting the Avengers, and I was on Avengers first. Mm-hmm. And Bryn said, listen, I'm going to tell Axel to take you off Avengers. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I got like two scenes in that movie. And he goes, because you need to be Mandarin. And I was like, why? And he was like, just look him up. You need to be Mandarin. So I was like, okay. So I start looking up and I get the whole 10 rings and everything about him. And then I call Bryn back and I'm like, you do know he's pretty Asian, right?
Right.
And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, and you want me to pull this off how? And he's like, I don't know. I'm just telling you, you should totally be that role. So I had a friend of mine, Renee, who's a makeup artist, and she does a lot of prosthetics classes. And so I called her and I'm like, Renee, you need to make me Asian. And she was like, what? And so I was like, yeah, get some prosthetics. I don't know how we'll do it. And she goes, well, they make eye prosthetics.
Yeah.
So what I did is I text Axel and I said, what are you going to do with this script? And he said, well, I got to change it because I don't have an Asian guy. We're going to make the Asian guy a non-sex role, and we're going to do a Sandman, and because there's blah, 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 whatever he was going to do. so as we were going through the paces, the next day I sent him some pictures, and I said, listen, I said, I just want you to consider this. And I sent him of me full Mandarin, the whole eyes, the hair, everything. Yeah. And he was like, shut up. And I was like, you like that? And he goes, I'm not changing a thing. You're going to be Mandarin. And he tells that story all the time, you know? So for me, I paid the makeup artist like $75 and sent him all these really cool kind of Asian. And Mandarin to me looks very Ming the Merciless, Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Very Ming. And so that's kind of like what we went for, is like the widow's peak, the high rise, slick back, all black hair, the goatee and Asian eyes. And obviously he wasn't Asian.
Right.
You know, and so that's kind of what we went for, and Axel loved it. And so now every single time he does a comic book movie, that's what we do. And I'll text him and he'll go, oh, well, I don't know where I'm going to put you. And I'm like, Axel, how many times have you hired me for your freaking comic book movies? And he's like, a lot. And I'm like, when have I not been able to play a role? I'm big. You put a mask on me. They can't see my face. We're good. And he's like, yeah, I forgot. So I'm in every one of them. We did Captain America. I played Crossbones. We just finished Batman versus Superman, which apparently has been like the number one seller for 5 weeks now.
Wow.
I think it's five or 6 weeks, something like that. And I played Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Shocker. And the irony is he didn't originally cast me for Lex.
Yeah.
And he had texted me and I said, I heard you're having an open casting call. And he goes, yeah, you should come down. I said, I'm not coming to an open casting call. Forget it. And he's like, oh, come on, D. And I said, no. I said, I've done like five of your movies already. You don't need to see me say your lines and all this other stuff. Yeah. I said, you know me. I'm already bald. I don't know what the problem is. And so he's like, oh, well. So fast forward, we get to AVN and I'm wearing a suit I had made and stuff like that. And he grabs me and he goes, oh my God, you need to be Lex Luthor. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, I didn't see you in the suit and da 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 da. And I'm like, Axel, you're an idiot. And I go, who did you get to play it? And he goes, Evan Stone. And I go, why would you get Evan Stone? And he goes, oh, he's a good actor. And he's giving me this song and dance. I said, stop. Let me tell you why you got Evan Stone. And he kind of looked at me and I said, you had Evan Stone because you wanted him to shave his head because he has long hair.
Right.
Just control for you. You want to see the fanfare of making Evan Stone shave his damn head.
I was going to ask how he was going to do it.
And Axel goes, yeah, you're right. It's true. I wanted to see him shave his head. He goes, but I'm going to change him. I'm going to give him a different role. You're going to be Lex Luthor. And so we ended up doing the Batman movie, versus Superman.
I really hope that no one told Evan he wasn't playing Lex until after he shaved his head.
Oh, I think they told him beforehand.
Oh, no.
But Evan, you know, you could talk that guy into doing anything.
Let's go back to the open casting.
Yeah.
What would that look like? What does an open casting call look like?
A lot like a mainstream. It's on a much smaller scale, obviously.
Right.
But basically, they let it be known that we're casting for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have an agent, yes, we do have agents in mainstream, in adult, just like in mainstream. And so they'll let it be known. Your agent might say, hey, we think you're, you know, you could probably play this role.
Yeah.
So maybe you should go to an open casting. And we did it for Magic Mike. I think we did it for another movie called Sexy. We've done it for most of Axel's movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they just videotape just like you would a normal casting audition.
And it's just reading lines, playing the part.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to randomly have sex with somebody. Like, the irony is, once we get to the sex, it is what it is. It's not that it's not exciting, but it's cookie cutter. It's 25 minutes of hard, 15, 20 minutes of soft, get four positions, it's just by the paces. It is what it is.
Have you ever had a script that says you have to do the specific act in it?
Sure. Yeah, a lot of the internet companies, browsers and stuff like that, they send over like damn near a dossier on what the scene is supposed to be. And some of them get so particular that you're like, wow, you have a lot of free time, you know.
Yeah.
And every time I shoot for Bang Bros, they have to okay every article of clothing that the female is wearing.
Why?
Because. Like, no, we don't like the light blue shirt. Have her wear the dark blue shirt. Okay, we like that one. That can stay. Now let's see the shorts. I'm just like, and they're literally taking a picture, text it to headquarters. Take a picture, text it to headquarters. I don't know why. Their check's clear, so I just keep doing my job.
But they don't have to approve what the men wear?
No, they don't give a damn what I wear.
All right. That's lucky for you.
Status quo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about your film Tough Love.
Oh yeah.
Because you're a CrossFit trainer and you have MMA experience.
I had taught martial arts for 17 years.
Yeah, you could kick anyone's ass.
I wouldn't go that far, but I can hold my own.
And so you wrote and directed, and you were in this MMA love story.
Yeah. So I've been involved in training pro MMA athletes for a while. Mm-hmm. A few of my athletes are that's how I met Ronda Rousey, because we're from the same camp prior to her going pro. So a lot of the guys that she trained with growing up, I ended up coaching, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I have a love affair with MMA and an even deeper love affair with martial arts. And I came up with this story about a girl who, and it was kind of in a roundabout way, kind of like an ode to Rhonda.
Yeah.
In very, very loosely. But it was about a female who was a trainer to a pro MMA athlete who was getting ready for a title, blah, blah, blah. And she really had an affinity for fighting, but there wasn't an outlet for her. There was no, you know, female pro fights. So mm-hmm. she was basically had an option to do smoker fights, underground fights against other girls.
Yeah.
Ends up killing it in these underground fights and now has to make a decision. Do I stay training this guy who's the pro guy, which happens to be her love interest and her, you know, soulmate kind of thing. And he can't support her. He's like, you're crazy. What are you doing? You shouldn't be fighting. It's stupid. Focus on me, mm-hmm. you know, I'm the champ, that kind of thing.
That sounds like a real healthy relationship.
Right. Well, he's, you know, it's just that whole, most fighters are pretty narrow-minded in that regard.
Okay.
But he doesn't understand, why do you want to fight? There's mm-hmm. no money in it. There's no future for you.
Right.
There's future in what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so she basically has to make a decision of where do I want to be? I've found my limelight for mm-hmm. what I dig, which is competing, and I'm good at it. I mean, I'm a good trainer, but I'm a better fighter.
Yeah.
So do I stick the path that I'm on with you, or do I make my own way? But her choice now impacts her personal life.
Right.
Because if she chooses her own way, they won't be together anymore. So do I pick the love of my life, or do I pick the love of my life?
Right.
And that's actually is the final shot of them having this very slow and thought out, but not very wordy departure, where she thinks that she's going to go with him, and he basically cuts it and says, you made your choice and I made mine.
Yeah.
And so she walks out of the stadium tunnel to the crowd with her bag, and he goes the other way. And so it's not very like romantic in that regard, and it's really dark, you know, because it's chicks fighting. And I trained Jessica Drake for that movie for like 3 months. The other female lead, Adriana Luna, she mm-hmm. used to be a pro kickboxer and has MMA background. She's a little tiny thing.
Yeah.
Super cute. But so she played the lead and killed it in that. So we spent a decent amount of time doing fight choreography. So I wrote it, I directed it, I did the fight choreography, I played the male lead. I'll never do that again.
Why not?
Oh my God, I wanted to shoot myself. One of my mentors is Brad Armstrong, mm-hmm. and Brad does that. Writes it, directs it, produces it, does everything for it, and then still does acting and does a scene. And I told him at the end, I go, I don't know how you do this, not just once or twice, but you do this all the time.
Yeah.
No way. No way. Maybe because I'm a newer director. Maybe. And it's very taxing. Mm-hmm. But Brad also left me. See, if I hadn't had Brad Armstrong, I never would have had that movie made, because it was a 3-day movie, which in our world is not difficult to come by for a new director. They won't give you that much money to start. Mm-hmm. They're like, make something cheap and we'll see how it is.
Right.
So I came out of the gate with a longer feature for them. And Brad basically went to the owner of the company and said, I will stand behind him. You know, it's a good choice. And he also was adamant about the fact that nobody was going to believe that he really directed the movie. So I did all of my scenes in one day.
Yeah.
Pretty much all my scenes in one day. And then he was never behind the director's booth again. The Video Village, he was my art director, and he stayed out of the way. And he was like, no one's going to say that I was doing your job for you.
Yeah.
I ended up getting a director nom for that. And our so it was like couples, best couples themed release for a feature. And I got it. I won the best actor for that movie too.
Yeah.
So I was okay with that. I'm going to go with, yeah, it was good. But I had an incredible crew. That's always the case, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So you would you be interested in writing and directing and maybe not performing, or writing and performing, or doing just two out of the three?
I write stuff when I feel it, like when there's something that I think that's going to be fun to do.
Yeah.
And that was like the last good big idea that I had. I've had a couple others. I directed some other movies for Hustler because I'm a motorcycle enthusiast really heavily. Mm-hmm. So we did a movie called Hard and Fast, which was just dirt bikes, quads, street bikes, the whole joint. Yeah. And but it's like a vignette kind of deal. So it's much more visual than it was anything else. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the process, you know what I mean? But it's also taxing. I don't direct to make money. Not that I'm not saying no to the money, but I direct it because there's something that I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like I see something visually that would be amazing. I wanted to do a snowboard movie. This last season, mm-hmm. but I was going to do it for Penthouse, and then we ran out of time because of the weather and stuff like that. But I wanted to do like literally like just snow and hot tubs and steam with the girls, and you know, waking up with the sunlight and crazy snowboard GoPro camera shots, and kind of like intertwined and vignette style for that, and then cut to like this gorgeous cabin type deal. But we ran out of time. So maybe next year.
Next year. Yeah. I was going to say, winter is a thing that happens all the time.
It does happen. Well, in California, though, it's like, there it is. It's gone.
Yeah. you just got to prepare for it.
Yeah, really. And so I only like to make a movie when there's something that I think that's cool about it. Mm-hmm. Not just because like, oh, well, they gave me two more budgets, so I'm going to knock out two more movies.
Right.
That gets daunting because you're constantly having to find new things. And it's porn. Like at the end of the day, you know, cowgirl's cowgirl, you know, regular's regular,
right?
You know, pop shot's a pop shot. Like that doesn't change. Mm-hmm. It's just, you try to add your own little flair to how it's shot and stuff like that. So,
Well, let's talk about, how you started, where you started. Cause you were first doing CrossFit and MMA and all this stuff before you started doing adult films. What was your first film? Do you remember?
Yes. Very vividly. The first movie that I ever did was for a title called Goth Scent 4. It was directed by a guy named Guy Capo for a company called DVSX Films, and was with a girl named Vanessa Lane. And I remember it vividly, number one, because it was my first movie, and number two, because I absolutely lied my way onto my first set. I had been dating somebody in the business, and so I knew a bunch of people because of it. And we had talked back and forth about me performing. And initially her reaction was, you're not having sex with other people for money. And I was like, hey, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you what the offers are. So we kind of went over it and discussed it from a financial standpoint. And she was like, well, can you do it? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. That kind of changes things. Like, it's one thing to sit there and say, I could totally do that. And it's different when somebody goes, okay, come on. By the way, that's the girl. There's the camera guy. There's PA. Okay, whenever you're ready. You know, and you don't know anybody.
What's going through your head the first time you're doing it?
The first time I was on set, I think I pulled up into the driveway of the location with a hard on. Like, I was just so like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But in the kind of like a good way, like, I'm like, I'm totally going to do this right now. so for me, I've learned over the years, you know, that you kind of, if you don't know what you're doing, act like you know absolutely everything that they're saying. Oh, okay. Got you. No problem. Got you. You know, and then you just really pay attention, you know, to what you think they're trying to get from you. And I try to read like the director, like if I see, you know, like, is this better or whatever the case may be. And basically you kind of fake it till you make it. And so the director didn't know it was my very first scene because I had lied to the producer who I knew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like, hey, by the way, I've totally been shooting for a bunch of people. And he's like, oh, like who? And I dropped some names. He's like, oh, I know them. So I'm like vigorously texting them like, listen, so-and-so asked about me. I've totally been shooting. And so Guy Capo finished the scene, and he went on something. At that time, we had something called pornstarperformance.com. Mm-hmm. And it was a chance for producers and directors to either lay praise or some negative feedback about performers. They were on time. They did a great job. They weren't prepared, whatever. He wrote up a really nice review about me, like, hey, this new guy, his name's Derek. I don't even know how to get in touch with him, but did a great job and was impressed, and I would absolutely use him again. And I was like, oh, damn, cool, okay. And that kind of got the ball rolling.
Right.
And from there, I was just able to meet and network. It's just like mainstream. It's not necessarily, I mean, talent has something to do with it, meaning being able to do the job.
Right.
But it's more about likability. You know, because if you're an 8 and the other guy's a 10, but the other guy's a jerk, they're going to go with the 8 every time.
Yeah.
Because you don't give them a hard time. You get along with people. You're happy to have on set. And it works, you know. So the guy who's a jerk, they only hire him when they have to, not when they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're in a scene and your partner is boring or not interested or you're not feeling it and you're having a bad day?
So you mean like Wednesday? No, I'm kidding.
Today's Wednesday.
I know.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
Thanks.
What? There's a formula. I was taught very early on from a director acquaintance of mine, Miles Long, and he pretty much gave me what his opinion of the formula for a good scene was. He said, good guy, good girl, good scene. Bad guy, bad girl, bad scene.
Okay.
Good girl, bad guy, bad scene. Good guy, bad girl, good scene. Because it's up to us, meaning the guys, to push, pull, position, and move you in the direction to which is most advantageous to the camera. So even though I can't make you like it kind of thing, I can make you look good. And if I can make you look good as a female performer, then it's going to look good on camera, which means now I've done your job and my job. I always liken male performers to kind of like linemen in NFL.
Okay.
Right? If you follow football at all.
I do not.
Okay. And your favorite running back of all time is such and such, you would remember his name. Mm-hmm. Like everybody knows John Elway.
Okay.
Most everybody knows
Everyone John else knows John Elway, yeah.
Denver Broncos. Okay. Anyway.
Okay.
He's a quarterback.
Thanks.
But nobody can name his linemen. But without them, he would never be able to perform. He'd never be able to do what he does. That's us. You know what I mean? You are the focus piece. You are the centerpiece. You are the female. You're the one on the box cover, mm-hmm. not me. But without me, you don't look good. So if I can't do my job, I make it very difficult for you to be very good at your job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I look at the duality of it, is we're kind of like the linemen. We make things happen so you can look good.
Isn't that a lot of pressure?
Sure.
How do you deal with that?
Day by day. Position by position, stroke by stroke.
Okay. What does an average week look like for you?
Well, it's got 7 days in it.
Right.
24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so we're on Wednesday. I was in Vegas on Sunday, Monday, and yesterday shooting.
The same project or different projects?
The same company.
Okay.
Different scenes every day. Not adhesive. They were all separate. Today's Wednesday. I'm here. I trained clients this morning. I'll train clients this afternoon. And then I'll train myself. And then I work tomorrow for another company. I'll train in the morning. I have two clients in the morning. And then Friday, I have another scene. So I probably work about 4 or 5 times a week, depending. Sometimes slow week is 2 or 3 times a week. And then I train 5 or 6 days a week. So today's on, one day off. And then mm-hmm. I usually have clients, about 5 or 6 different clients rotating throughout the week.
And you rest at some point?
I rest when you're dead. I have other businesses too. I also have some real estate, and that takes up a certain amount of time. And then I also have my hobbies, which are cars and motorcycles. I have 3 motorcycles. I have a Challenger, Supercharged, I just finished. I have like a lot of things that I like to do.
Yeah.
And my dogs. You know, all that.
Busy man.
You got to be, right?
Yeah.
This is LA. I'd rather have 1 million pennies than $1 million check for one thing.
Okay. What is the biggest misconception when you first started in the industry that you wish someone would have told you?
I was pretty knowledgeable coming in. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of knew what I was getting into. So I had been around it haphazardly for like about a year before I had gotten involved in it. It's not so much something that I thought was one way and turned out to be another, mm-hmm. but more along the lines of, everybody else thinks that it's something else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when I say I'm going to work, you know, they're like, are you going to work? Are you going to work? And it's like, you know, yeah, my job. And like, oh, right. Your job. Right. That's hard work. And I'm like, yeah, I get the joke.
Right.
I understand it. And it's fine that you think that you're glib, even though you're not, because I've only heard that joke a million times.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it is a job. I am responsible for this. These people have a lot of money tied up in this project, mm-hmm. and they need to get their returns. And if I don't do my job, then I cost them money. If I cost them money, I don't have a job.
Right.
You know, that's just the nuts and bolts of any entertainment-based industry, any industry in general. You know what I mean? You waste people's time, you waste their money. And so if you're not productive, then you're going to be gone. Yeah. And so other people think that anything having to do with entertainment is not necessarily real work because I'm not doing back-breaking labor, although sometimes I am.
Right.
They think it's all fun. And don't get me wrong, I love my job. But some days are harder than others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are guys out there who want to get into the industry. There are, I'm sure, tons of them. What does it take?
Thick skin.
Yeah.
But that's entertainment in general.
That's entertainment in general, yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're an actor, you have to get used to being said no to every day. Every day. No, you're too tall. You're too short. You're too thin. You're too fat. You don't have hair. You don't have enough hair. You have too much hair. You have wrong skin tone. You have glasses. You don't. There's everything under the sun, right? Except now, an adult, there's a whole other set of you're not right for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm never, ever going to be on a website called Monsters of Cock. That's just not going to happen. It's not me. I can't hide that fact. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm working with what I'm working with. That's just it. It's thick skin. You have to be able to take direction. And it's not just take direction like two steps to your left. You're naked. You know what I mean? You have multiple things going on at the same time. If you can't have an open mind to some general criticisms and the proficiency to get things done in that capacity under what I would consider a decent amount of stress, you're not going to make it. You know what I mean? It's never, let's do four positions on that couch over there. It's always like, wow, this stand looks really sturdy. Let's do 40 minutes of sex on this. Figure it out. You know what I mean? And you're like, are you retarded? You know, but that's what it is because it's not for me. It's not for you as a performer. It's for the end user, mm-hmm. you know? And so they don't particularly care if you're comfortable or if you're having a good time.
Yeah.
They care that it looks good. If it looks amazing and you feel terrible, tough. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And it's cutthroat. It's a very small business as far as the amount of people that are in it. And, you know, I think for us, and compared to like mainstream acting and entertainment, excuse me, we're fighting for a much smaller share of mm-hmm. the pie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So where mainstream has multiple amounts of opportunities for revenue, we don't. We have a certain box that we can work within, and you can only water it down so many times, you know. So it makes it extremely competitive, you know, more so than other ones, you know. That's why I said it's always about relationships. So if somebody's is interested in getting into the business, think carefully because it's a grind and it's a day-to-day hustle. It's one of the reasons why we had spoken earlier off set about kind of like dating.
Mm-hmm.
I purposely put my phone on the table on a first date and I explained to them, I live and die by my phone. Right. If this phone goes off, I have to check it. If that's a problem for you, we can ask for the check now and I'll leave. It's all good. But I'm not going to miss money. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I'm having a date with you. It doesn't mean I'm going to be rude, right? But I need to check that phone. So every time that phone goes off, I need to look. Okay. I can not talk to them. Oh, wait, I have to confirm this one. That's what it's about, making money.
Yeah. Speaking of making money, let's talk about bangingpornstars.com. What is this website of yours?
So I'm with a network called Pooba, mm-hmm. and Pooba has some pretty awesome girls. They have a Bella Danger. They have, God, who else do they have? They have London Keys. They have, I think they have Cindy Starfall. They have a bunch of really, really hot girls. And I'm like the only dude on their whole network of sites. Mm-hmm. So I just came up with something that kind of appeals to what I would consider most guys, yeah. Which is, how do they really have sex when they're not on camera? So even though it's on camera, right?
Right.
It's literally like how I would try to, I use you as an example because you're sitting next to me. Right. So not to be disrespectful, but you know, I would text you like, what are you doing? And then your answer is, I'm not doing nothing. All right. Well, cool. You're done with work. Why don't you come over? And like, so I'll film that. Right.
Yeah.
And then I just set up GoPros and sometimes I have, one of the our shooters kind of shoot like a little bit farther camera, but I always shoot it myself, mm-hmm. From a POV standpoint. And it's not scripted in that regard.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if you need to take a break and get some water, we're not turning the cameras off because that's just real. Like,
yeah.
I need a break. Okay, here's some water. Let's go. You know, and that kind of joint. So yeah. That's what it is. And I have a tendency to work with a lot of the higher profile girls.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of like an opportunity for us to kind of like chop it up on camera before we have sex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting and brilliant idea.
Yeah. So far, so good. It's working out pretty well.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast. I've learned so much. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on Twitter and Instagram and all that good stuff?
On Twitter, you can find me at the D Pierce. On Instagram, it's Derek Pierce, DERRICKPIERCE. And then the website is bangingpornstars.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And if you want to follow Adult Films Exposed on Twitter, which you really should, it's at AFXPOSED. That's AFXPOSED. Also, why don't you tweet at us who you want to see here next using hashtag AFXNext. You can find me on Twitter at Yael Teagle. That's YAELTYGIEL. And we'll see you next week for a brand new episode of Adult Films Exposed.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.